This is the Mike McFeely Show on Live Local First, 790 KFGO and KFGO.com.
Hello, everyone. It's the Mike McFeely Show here on KFGO. I'm guest host for the next 2 days, Clay Jenkinson. If you're a listener to this show, you know that on Mondays at 4:30, I'm usually the guest of the great Mike McFeely. And McFeely told me a few weeks ago that I am the number one requested guest host. But that's not really true, Dan. I think the number one is anyone but McFeely. And then there's a long list. I think I'm number 7 or 8 on that list.
So you open up the show with taking a shot
with
at him.
With a shot at me.
Yeah, he's not even here to defend himself.
But he's off on some junket, isn't he?
Yeah, I believe he is.
He went off to the big NCAA tournament.
He did. And now he's, I think he's back.
He's somewhere in limbo.
He's somewhere in limbo. Probably
Devil's Lake.
Yeah,
which is apparently where he is whenever he's not available. But he said that I was the number one requested guest host, and then I looked into it. And on the list, it said anybody but McFeely, which kind of broke my heart, and I'm sure
well, where's
his
heart list? Too. Can you produce it?
Yes, I can. Yes, I certainly can. I think Snowden has it.
Yeah, we'll never see it then. It's off in Russia.
So I'm your guest host, Clay Jenkinson, for the next 2 days, 2 to 5 today and 2 to 5 tomorrow. And I need your help. I need you to call. You hear me every week if you're a frequent listener to this program. Some of you probably agree with what I say. Many of you disagree. Or if you have questions or thoughts on what's in the air, current events, what's on your mind, whatever it is, if you call in, this will be your chance to either talk about McFeely in his absence, although I'm sure he's listening, or just to talk about whatever suits you. And I have a number of guests. Let me just tell you what's on store for today. First of all, I want to talk with my friend, David Borlaug, of Washburn, North Dakota, about his cousin, Norman Borlaug, who was the father of the Green Revolution. So we'll come to that in a moment. In the 3 o'clock hour, for the whole hour, Dr. Thomas Ambrosio of NDSU, he is the chair of NDSU's International Studies major, and I want him to give us a short course on the Crimea and its relation to the Ukraine and also, of course, to the Russian Federation. And then at 4:35, Dan, as we do every week, we'll be talking with Clay Jenkinson of Bismarck, our frequent commentator from that part of the world. Maybe McFeely will call in from wherever he happens to be. But let's start by talking with David Borlaug of the Lewis and Clark Fort Mandan Foundation. David, are you there?
I am here. Glad to be here.
Now, this is interesting because you, of course, are David Borlaug, B-O-R-L-A-U-G, and you grew up in a newspaper family in Washburn, North Dakota, but not just a namesake of yours, but a cousin of yours is an even greater Borlaug, Dr. Norman Borlaug, who is 100 or would be 100 years old tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about the great Dr. Norman Borlaug.
I guess I'll never forget when I first learned about him was in 1970 when I was 13 or 14 years old. And heading to work to the newspaper after school, and the NBC News on the Hour just announced that Dr. Norman Borlaug has been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. And my brother, driving the car, just went nuts, just went ballistic. And I just remember looking at him and saying, so we're related? And he says, of course we are, you numbskull. But it was quite an introduction to Norman Borlaug. I'd heard of him before then.
So Norman Borlaug was born in Iowa.
And that's where my family comes from originally. My grandfather and uncle, great uncles, all grew up in the Cresco, Decorah, Iowa area, as did Norman. And he and my grandfather were cousins.
And his birthday was March 25th, 1914. So if he had lived, he died in 2009. If he had lived, he would be 100 years old tomorrow. And he is credited, David, with having fed 1 billion people on Earth or have saved the lives of 1 billion people. Tell us about his work.
Well, he started under the auspices, the direction, the funding of the Rockefeller Foundation back in those days. But he worked tirelessly starting in the late 1940s in Mexico. And just good old-fashioned, hybrid genetics of using multiple seasons with the climate down there. And he set about to change the world by creating wheat and corn varieties that eventually allowed starving countries like India and Pakistan to feed themselves. lives. And that's where saving the lives of a billion people comes into play. And he did that work anonymously, quietly, for 30 years before receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. And even since then, you know, he's not a well-known figure, even though not only did he get the Nobel Peace Prize, but the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the Congressional Gold Medal. I was privileged to be there in Washington in 2008. That's the last time I saw him, the year before he died. The only other personages that are so honored are Martin Luther King Jr., Elie Wiesel, and Mother Teresa.
Now, there have been seven people altogether who have won the Triple Crown, the Nobel Peace Prize, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and the Congressional Gold Medal. It's an incredible achievement, David, and think about it. I mean, here's a man who grew up on a farm in rural Iowa. He went to the University of Minnesota, where he received his BS, his MS, and finally his PhD in forestry, and he went on to be the father of the Green Revolution, and he has literally saved the lives of a billion people by developing these drought-resistant strains of wheat, which have effectively revolutionized modern agriculture. I mean, this is a truly extraordinary man.
Well, you can imagine why I and my family are so proud of him, and to have had the opportunity several times to visit with him. It's just a remarkable person. And by the way, he ended up at Minnesota on a wrestling scholarship. He really had no intention of getting into the field that he did, but he got into forestry. And then from there, it just became one of those incredible stories that are for the ages.
Now, David, we need to take a short break, but when we come back, I want you to talk about what's going to happen in Washington, D.C. tomorrow on the actual 100th birthday of Dr. Norman Borlaug. We're talking with David Borlaug of the Lewis and Clark Ford Mandan Foundation. Welcome back to the Mike McFeely Show here on KFGO. I'm guest host Clay Jenkins, and today and tomorrow, do text us or call us if you'd like to join this conversation. Our text number in the short code is 35270, 35270, and our telephone number is 701-237-5948. We're talking with David Borlaug, the president of the Lewis and Clark Fort Mandan Foundation. David, welcome back. Dr. Borlaug is not only the father of the Green Revolution, but he also is the creator of something called the Borlaug Hypothesis, which argues that he started in forestry, as I said, and he believed that if you want to avoid deforestation in the third world, you need to raise crop production so that the people who live in that world don't chop down all the trees and create a lot of other environmental problems. So he wasn't just a geneticist and a social planner. He also had a very deep background in ecology. And tomorrow in Washington, D.C., there will be a ceremony honoring him. Tell us about that.
He will be installed. A statue of him will be installed in National Statuary Hall. You and I both remember when North Dakota placed the Kaga'wiya there during the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial. It's an enormous honor to be placed in the hall. And what could be better than to have it done on his 100th birthday, which also happens to be National Agriculture Day. So it's a huge event. And I'll tell listeners to go to worldfoodprize.org.
Worldfoodprize.org.
The World Food Prize is something he founded years ago. Now it's his legacy, and they are the overarching sponsors of this event. But they are really offering incredible coverage of the event. But loads and loads of information about Norman are available on that website. And as you know, if all things considered, a month ago at this time, the intention was I would have been probably right now ensconced at the bar at Old Ebbets Grill, eating crab cakes and a glass of Chardonnay as the lead-up to the first reception for this event. But a recent surgery, and now I'm in recovery, has prevented me from attending. But I hope that C-SPAN or somebody will be covering this. I'm sure there'll be some media attention.
Of course, and I just wanted to say your voice is not its usual strength. You've had an operation. We'll talk about that after the bottom of the hour here. But let's go back to this event tomorrow. Statuary Hall is in the U.S. Capitol, and as I understand it, David, each state can have up to two statues?
That is correct, and Iowa had two statues, and they decided a few years ago, their legislature, to pull one of them. They had two figures, Harlan and Kirkwood, both Civil War generals, notable people in their own right, but they decided that Norman Borlaug was so deserving of this. It's something that, to be honest, I think North Dakota started something by placing Sacagawea. We only had one statue. It's typical North Dakota frugality. We never got around to two. But thanks to then-Congressman Earl Pomeroy, who came up with the idea, and then your and my good friend Jim Fugley and I worked the North Dakota legislature and got this passed. But since Sacagawea, with you know, quite a bit of appeal there, was placed in Statuary Hall, several states have decided to remove someone and then replace it with someone more notable. And that's what the great state of Iowa has done.
I don't know who's been removed for Dr. Norman Borlaug, but, I mean, there are very few people in history that can be said to have fed a billion people. You know, I'm a historian, David, and as you know, until the 20th century, no person on earth could expect to live his or her entire life without the prospect of famine. And famine still does exist in small pockets around the world, and there's certainly hunger. But probably nobody did more than Dr. Norman Borlaug to end that. And he talked a little bit about that. He was a very humble man, as you know, but he said that he was asked, well, what is your legacy? And he said, and I'm quoting now, a temporary success in man's war against hunger and deprivation. That's pretty dark, a temporary success.
Well, what hunger does, you know, what hunger creates. I'll never forget Clay being there when he received the Congressional Gold Medal. He was escorted to the podium by President Bush and Nancy Pelosi. And one after another of dignitaries all spoke well of Dr. Borlaug. And then he gets up and he's, you know, he's in his early 90s with no notes. And just prior to that, the president had vetoed legislation that would have continued funding for agricultural experiment stations. And taking note of that, he, in his speech, he said, you fight world hunger, you eliminate hunger, you will fight all the isms of the world, communism, fascism, socialism. And without missing a beat, he turned and looked directly at the president of the United States who had vetoed that bill and said, and terrorism. And a chill went through that crowd. And it was a very telling moment. And for someone at his age to take advantage of that platform and make that statement was really profound.
It's going to be an amazing day. I'm so sorry that you can't be there to represent your family and the state of North Dakota there. We just have about a minute left in this segment, David. But, you know, there are critics of Dr. Norman Borlaug. They say that he was a front man for great agribusiness companies like Monsanto, that he helped to force capitalism on third world countries, that that this increased social inequality in these countries, that these are genetically addictive strains of wheat and so on. You've heard some of this. He gave his own answer to this. He said that many of the people who resist these ideas are elitists. They do their lobbying, I'm quoting now, they do their lobbying from comfortable office suites in Washington or Brussels. If they had lived just 1 month amid the misery of the developing world, as I have for 50 years, they'd be crying out for tractors and fertilizer and irrigation canals and be outraged that fashionable elitists back home were trying to deny them these things.
We all love farmers markets. We all love organic clay. It's good for you, but it's not feeding a growing world.
We are going to take a break. David, stay with us if you can. Welcome back to KFGO. I'm Clay Jenkinson, guest hosting for the great Mike McFeely, who is lost somewhere in NCAA land. And our guest for this hour is my good friend David Borlaug, who's the president of the Lewis and Clark Fort Mandan Foundation out in Bismarck and Washburn. That's the home of Fort Mandan, where Lewis and Clark spent the longest period of any encampment on the entire Lewis and Clark Trail. And David Borlaug, among other things, is the cousin of the great and famous Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Norman Borlaug, whose 100th birthday it is tomorrow and who is getting a statue, thanks to the people of Iowa, in Statuary Hall at the U.S. Capitol tomorrow. David, let me ask you this. You know, agriculture remains North Dakota's bread and butter. All the buzz now is about energy, carbon, fracturing, the Bakken oil field, etc. But agriculture has been and continues to be the basis of the North Dakota economy. David?
Yes, I agree heartily.
And at Fort Mandan, which is just 43 miles north of Bismarck, you are now the holder of the Centennial Agriculture Project. Say a little bit about that.
Well, it's a great opportunity to build on that legacy of agriculture and to remind people that we do have here in North Dakota, throughout the Midwest and across the country, but especially in the upper Midwest, an agrarian heritage. We tend to lose sight of it. It's easy to not have Jeffersonian idealism in mind as our farmers are out in the field in their GPS-driven vehicles and in a very high-tech world that we live in. But it is. Tilling the soil is a noble endeavor. Nobody knows it better than you, how Jefferson felt about being a farmer. And innately, that is how farmers still feel. No matter how big they are, no matter how big business it's become, it is a way of life. And it's the fabric of the society in North Dakota. Even though we're seeing this tumultuous shift, if you will, nothing still compares to agriculture the way it is woven through the very fabric of our entire state, from east to west to north to south, right there in Cass County and Fargo. My goodness, the impact of agriculture is a phenomenon. It's like the Napa Valley of California. And so it is vitally important, and we are committed to telling that story with a Jeffersonian theme tied to the 1,000-year history of our American Indian farmers, who we call our first farmers, but then honoring those farmers, those farm families, that have been in business for 100 years or more, which just speaks to the resilience, to the success of agriculture in North Dakota, that one family can stay in that business for 100 years or more.
Yes, those who labor in the earth, said Jefferson, are the chosen people of God. And David, you and I both know that when the last barrel of oil has been removed from western North Dakota and the landscape is quiet again, that we will be as agricultural a state as we have ever been. We have a call from Dan of Fargo who wants to talk with you, David Borlaug, about Dr. Norman Borlaug. Dan, go ahead.
Thank you for taking the call, Clay.
You're welcome.
David, I once had the good fortune to meet your cousin, and it was totally out of context for me, anyhow, at the time. I used to be in the mid-80s. I worked for Melrose, who I worked for, and I was a district manager in the southeast and sold forestry products. I was at an American pulpwood show, and we had some equipment on display at it in Atlanta. And this stately gentleman walked over and he said, "You're with Bobcat." And I said, "Yes, sir." And he explained his North Dakota ties and history and asked me if I knew the Melrose family and some other people that he knew. And we sat there and visited, I bet, for a good half hour, one-on-one.
Well, that's a wonderful experience.
The next day, he came back and he visited some more with me. I guess I bored him to death the first time. But to make a long story short, I didn't know Norman Borlaug's name. I had nothing to put him in context with anything. But
well,
my brother-in-law
had
to be a plant pathologist.
Yep, he was remarkably humble and... Your experience is very typical of many that other people had with him. Could sit and visit with this very affable gentleman and have no idea they were sitting in the midst of greatness.
Oh, Dan, thank you very much for your call. What a great thing, David, to meet somebody of such international importance, and his humility was a very important part of his life. And what I love best about this story, David, is that Dr. Norman Borlaug grew up on a family farm. You know, he came from the very same roots that we all did, from the rural Midwestern country of small family farmers. He went off to the University of Minnesota, which is a great university, and he changed the world, but he never lost that rootedness in the family farm. And Dan's story is a perfect illustration of the fact that this man never got beyond his own rural modesty.
The very first time I met him was in the late 1980s when North Dakota State University was celebrating its centennial. and among a series of lecturers they had, if you can imagine, on the stage at the same time, Dr. Norman Borlaug, along with John Kenneth Galbraith, the great economist. And after his presentation, I was able to secure a few moments with Norman in a back room on campus. And upon introducing myself, all he wanted to talk about was the North Dakota family, the North Dakota contingent, and my grandfather, who was a Lutheran minister, who you know, born and raised in his area. And that is what he was, and he had no pretensions whatsoever.
I was sorry, however, to hear Dan talk about the bobcat, because as you know, David, I only have one dream left in life.
I thought that struck a chord. I was fearful.
I want a bobcat. I think every man wants a bobcat. I don't have a bobcat. I can't afford a bobcat. I keep thinking if Mike McFeely were really my friend, he'd get me a little payola. You know how radio hosts get to drive the BMW or the Porsche? You have a bobcat, David, at Ford Mandan.
I think that, yes, a bobcat, I reluctantly state in your presence, given to us by
given
bobcat.
To you. That's, it seems wrong.
Basis. Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe talk nice to Kevin sometime, Clay, and he'll put the bobcat on a slow day on a trailer and bring it down to your place, and you can wreak havoc in the neighbor's yard.
I just want a bobcat. I'm not even going to use it. I'm just going to park it in my driveway and put armor all on it. And then when my neighbors come by and say, "Can I borrow your bobcat?" I'm going to say, "Get lost."
Well, I've got a 1/32nd or so scale bobcat on my desk. I think you've coveted it from time to time.
But yeah, but that's not the same, is it?
It's not the same.
Now, before we go to break, we have about a minute here, David. After the break, I want to continue this conversation. And this changes the subject, but you have been in the hospital, at Sanford Hospital in Bismarck. You have had a pretty significant operation, and I want you to talk a little bit about it, not in terms of your own situation so much as the American healthcare system. How long were you in the hospital?
Well, I just looked at the bill. In a nutshell, it was a 3-hour surgery. I then spent 11 days in the hospital, which I don't recommend for anyone. It just took a little while to come around. But, you know, it's what can you say? For all that we can harp about, you're uncomfortable, you have a problem, you push a button, there's a nurse or a CNA right there. I had world-class medical attention at Sanford in Bismarck. I've been to Mayo Clinic before. I've been to Sanford, and this time around I decided, if you're going to be miserable for a week or more, I want to be miserable in my hometown.
And quickly, what was the operation?
Basically what they call a resection in my colon. They take out a portion that was giving me troubles and sew it back together again.
So you suffer from what, diverticulitis?
Yes, that was what was sending me to the hospital, and so this taking out that offending portion, hopefully, will result in no more trips.
So major surgery and 11 days in the hospital. Dare I ask what this would cost on the free market?
Well, you know, I looked at the bill, and the surgery itself was $3,500, of which I'm responsible for $325. Of course, you know, the bills will then come later, or the statements from Blue Cross Blue Shield, which I'm fortunate to have, and the 11 days of succeeding care will be enormously expensive, I'm sure. But it seems like my total out-of-pocket is going to be somewhere between $500 and $1,000 when all is said and done.
Well, we're going to take a break here, but the total must have been something like $100,000 or more if you had to pay for it out of your pocket.
I would suspect, but we'll just wait for the statements to catch up.
We'll pick it up from there. We'll be back with David Borlaug to talk about the Lewis and Clark Ford Mandan Foundation and our most recent book. You're listening to The Mike McFeely Show. I am your guest host, Clay Jenkinson. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Mike McFeely Show. I'm your guest host, Clay Jenkinson. Today and tomorrow on this station, we're glad you're with us. Send in your questions and comments. We would love to hear from you. It is 237-5948. After the news at the top of the hour, we'll be talking with Thomas Ambrosio, professor of political science at NDSU, and he'll be here to talk about the situation in the Crimea and Ukraine. We're talking with David Borlaug of the Lewis and Clark Ford Mandan Foundation. David is not at full strength. He's recently had major surgery. David, I just got a text from our mutual friend, Stephanie Ambrose Tubbs, the daughter of the famous Stephen Ambrose, who wrote Undaunted Courage. And she says this: she will be in Washington next week. She will visit Norman Borlaug's statue on your behalf and take a photograph. And she also said, does David now have to wear one of those bags, which I thought was a cheap shot.
Well, and the good news is, no, I don't, but it wouldn't matter if I did, would it?
So you're in the hospital for 11 days, and it's hard to sleep. It's major surgery. It's tough to come back from this. You've been on all of these drugs, including morphine. We're talking about an enormous amount of money, David. And you, what do you think your out-of-pocket will eventually be?
Well, I think it'll be under $1,000. My other experience has certainly been that I should know these things. Other people pay more attention about what you're capped at and that sort of thing. But I know I have a bill from Sanford as guarantor of something like $500. And then I know the Blue Cross statement shows $300 and some, you know, my share. But that's a moving target. You wait until things all get added up. Perhaps I'll be surprised, but it'll be, you know, I can at least say fortunately, because I'm in a place where, for me, that's a nominal expense. It's not for everybody. And certainly if you're uninsured, it could be a catastrophe.
No, but what a bargain, really. I mean, say what you want about the craziness of our medical system in the United States in terms of financing and government involvement and paperwork and so on. But you had a life-threatening malady, which has been repaired by the unbelievable ingenuity of our medical system, and you spent a third of a month in a hospital with nurse care 24 hours a day, et cetera, et cetera. And after all is said and done, your out-of-pocket expenses will be probably under $1,000. You just have to see that as a miracle on the same scale with what Dr. Norman Borlaug did for agriculture.
Well, it is, and nothing is all perfect. And we just know that much of America is uninsured, and we don't need to start a conversation on the Affordable Care Act. But I'm one of those that believes that inherently quality health care should be viewed as something more than a privilege on the greatest nation on earth. And I personally think it's just a real affront, the things that we take as privileges and rights, and the things that we disdain, and the things that we think only belong to those who can afford to pay for them. It doesn't say much for a superpower.
Well, indeed, you are treading into dangerous ground here, as you know, David, but I of course, agree with you.
Perhaps it's my frailty. I better watch.
It's really a question of what's called distributive justice, and I know you feel this, but why should you, David Borlaug, who are the president of a foundation and come from a family that has some means, have the best medical care in the world, and some person who's born 10 miles from you in Oliver County, who doesn't have insurance or can't afford insurance, why should that person get either significantly less high-quality care or no care at all under our system?
Well, and why should the burden fall upon everyone's employer to make this possible as well? So, no, it's an interesting debate. I wish, like a lot of things, we could have a free and open debate with the vitriol taken out and the posturing and the gotcha politics that we live with today. I think we truly could come up with answers.
I thought they did take the vitriol out of you there.
Yeah, they took it out of me, but they didn't take it out of Washington.
So let me change the subject, David. As you know, Lewis Clark Ford Mandan Foundation is also the home of the Dakota Institute, which includes the Dakota Institute Press. And I believe that you have a new book coming out this spring.
Yes, we do, by our common friend, Melanie Carvel, who I've been doing a fair amount of shout-outs to Sanford Health, and I guess here's one more. She's instrumental with their Women's Wellness Center in the Bismarck area, a nationally known triathlete, and she's written a remarkable book about growing up, and you talk about humble beginnings like Norman Borlaug, but growing up in the small rural community of Mott, North Dakota, and through her life, facing adversity from time to time, and what a remarkable, remarkable life she's had. And it will be a book that will resonate with a lot of people, Running with the Antelope.
Running with the Antelope, Melanie Carvel's memoir. Melanie grew up in Mott, North Dakota, in a Catholic family in the 1970s. She went to the University of North Dakota. She's a physical therapist and the director of the Women's Health Center at Sanford Medical System in Bismarck, and she has written this really truly remarkable account of growing up in a small town in the 70s and going on to be a world important athlete, but never again, just like Norman Borlaug, losing the common touch. I edited this manuscript on behalf of my friend Melanie Carvel, and it is just an extraordinary read. Whether you are an athlete or a runner or not, it is just an unbelievable portrait of a remarkable woman growing up in a small town and going on to national and international greatness, and now wanting to tell you, David Borlaug. You know, if she were on this program, David, she'd be saying, David, I want you to walk around the block this afternoon. And if you walk around the block this afternoon, by next week, you'll be going three times around the block. She's the kind of person who wants us all to be healthy. And when you read this book, you want to be healthy too.
That's the impact she'll have on a lot of people. I know this will be an immensely popular book. It'll be out early this summer. We're really looking forward to it. And it's the kind of book that will make a difference in people's lives. And what more could a publisher ask for?
And David, also another book that we published this year about the Nez Perce, Lewis and Clark among the Nez Perce, the Nimiipuu people of the Idaho High Country and the Columbia and Snake River Valleys. That book has been getting extremely good reviews.
Very good reviews and well received, selling well. You always wait for Oprah or somebody to pick up on these things because 6,000 books a month, as I recall, are published in America today. Anybody that thinks print is dead, it's not the case. And so it's a crowded marketplace. And yet we produce books that are important to our region, our sense of place, our sense of history. And we're really excited. This is a wonderful compliment to our very first book that you edited and wrote the foreword, River of Promise by David McAndrey.
About Lewis and Clark in the Columbia Basin.
On the Columbia, but this one, as you would like to say, reverses the lens, and for the first time ever, we're truly telling the story of the Lewis and Clark expedition through Indian eyes, and it's a story that needs to be told. All of our books are distributed nationally, are available from Zambros in downtown Fargo to Barnes and Nobles to Amazon.com, and distributed by the University of Oklahoma Press. So we're blessed in that we have a true international, if you will, footprint with our publishing. And, of course, your own books, notwithstanding, The Character of Meriwether Lewis and For the Love of North Dakota, books that are doing very, very well for us.
You know, and my book, The Character of Meriwether Lewis, I gave a copy to McFeely, and he claims he read it. You know, we'll leave that to the listener's discretionary view of McFeely, but he's hiding somewhere between here and the West Coast. David, we're down to just a few seconds left. Also, the film that you made on Harold Schaefer will be released again this spring. Tell us quickly a little bit about that.
We finally have some public events in both Bismarck and Fargo. We launched it when it did come out in Medora, appropriately enough. But now we want to take it to the audiences at the Fargo Theater, perhaps, downtown Bismarck at the Belmehus. So people can stay tuned for that. They can keep up with us at fortmandan.com. And also the show that we produce with you, your very own Jefferson Hour, Thomas Jefferson Hour on public radio. All of that at thejeffersonhour.com.
David, thanks for letting us know about the Norman Borlaug story. We wish you could be in Washington, D.C. for it. We're thrilled to have you on. We wish you a speedy recovery, and thanks to the American Medical Care System and the work of the Lewis and Clark Fort Mandan Foundation. I'm your guest host, Clay Jenkinson.